Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the beloved Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Andrew Johnson of National Review, in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for you as usual, which we'll get to in just a moment. But real quick, Andrew, yesterday we had the House Republican leadership elections, all made necessary, of course, by the surprise defeat of Eric Cantor about a week and a half ago. He is stepping down at the end of July as majority leader. To little surprise, the current whip, Kevin McCarthy, was elected on the first ballot as the new majority leader. More of the Tea Party wing was pushing Raul Labrador of Idaho for the race to replace McCarthy as whip, though. The more establishment choice, Peter Roskam, did not win. It was Steve Scalise, the current head of the Republican Study Committee, which is kind of the conservative coalition in the House. Marlon Stutzman of Indiana was also in the running, but that was also decided on the first ballot. We kind of got what we expected on the majority leader, and I don't know if we got exactly what everyone expected on the whip, but certainly is interesting. What does it tell us, if anything?
Yeah, in some ways, you did probably have more people in the conservative wing a little upset that that they're sort of wondering, wait, where was all that momentum behind the Cantor defeat, and that's why they're rallying around Labrador. But Scalise in the whip spot is maybe something that they can feel comfort in. He is definitely on the more conservative side, although he does show a willingness to work with leadership, sort of find some compromise. So especially if you only had about a week and a half to kind of throw this election together, if you're on sort of the more conservative Tea Party side, I don't think you could be too upset with the results. Maybe they're not your guys, but also could you realistically have expected too much different?
My favorite tweet from yesterday in reaction to the Scalise victory was, Steve Scalise passed the first test of being whip, knowing he had the votes to actually win. So
there you go.
So he's off to a good start, I guess. All right, on to the good martini for today. And earlier this week, Eliana and I were talking about the Wall Street Journal NBC poll, which was showing Obama lagging far behind, not just on approval, but on foreign policy, and most importantly, trust of the American people to get things done. He was underwater by about 12 points on a lot of those key issues. Now, NPR has done an interesting poll that only focuses on responses from folks in 12 what are considered battleground states. So they take out the deep red and the deep blue states, and they focus on Alaska, which you could argue is pretty red, actually, Arkansas, Colorado, Georgia, Iowa, Kentucky, Louisiana, Michigan, Montana, New Hampshire, North Carolina, and West Virginia. Those are the states that have the most competitive Senate races this year. So if you look at some of the numbers here, the president's overall approval rating, 20 points underwater, 58% disapprove, 38% approve. Perhaps even more telling, he's 30 points underwater among independents, 63-33. The GOP actually holds a 3-point lead on the generic ballot, 46-43, which they almost never do. And then on the trust issues, which party do you trust to handle these particular issues? On the economy, it's the Republicans by 10 points, 20 points among independents. It's a 4-point edge on health care, 9-point edge among independents. And on the future of the middle class, it's dead even both between the two parties and among the independents. So, Andrew, it looks as though, historically speaking, the president's approval numbers in a midterm election year are a telling fact. They certainly were in 2006 for Bush and in 2010 for Obama in the wake of Obamacare. So if history is any guide, these battleground states are definitely tilting in the direction conservatives would like to see.
Yeah. I mean, again, if I was any of the red state Democrats or any of the vulnerable Democrats, I would be pretty nervous about these recent numbers. I think there was sort of a sense after the Obamacare deadline a couple months ago that, you know, oh, no, Republicans, you know, can't no longer have something to sort of put their foot on the pedal on and go full speed ahead on Obamacare. Maybe that's somewhat of a deflated issue. But in the last month, I mean, we have seen the Obama administration sort of step into more and more troubles that are losing confidence among the American public. I mean, everything from what's going on internationally, the Bo Bergdahl swap. I mean, the economy hasn't been getting better. So I think in some ways there was maybe a sense, again, among Republicans that we can't run on Obamacare solely up to November. But this poll indicates that there is just a general dissatisfaction and disapproval with the president on a whole range of issues.
Obviously, it'll be interesting to see how the narrative works from here. We've kind of seen scandal after scandal the last few weeks, and that's bound to drive numbers down. I don't know if Iraq and the latest developments there are factored into this poll. But as the narrative turns to the fall campaign season, obviously different issues will be out there. If they can Todd Aikenize any Republican candidate out there that could possibly turn the momentum to some extent, but 20 points down on the president's approval, 30% among independents. That is a hard ship to reverse, especially when you've had 6 years of this presidency for people to evaluate. So.
Exactly. And just on the Todd Aikenization of stuff is that, you know, the Republican Party has been very aware of that. And actually, I think the crop of recruits that we have this year running are a lot stronger than we had in the past. So, of course, anything can happen. Someone can always say something silly. But sort of this class of recruits seem to be very well trained, seem to know what they're talking about, seem to know what they're doing. So if you're a Republican, you got to be feeling pretty good.
One thing the media is well known for, and we're probably no exception, Andrew, is that before we're even done with the midterms, we always like to look ahead to the next presidential election. And this cycle is no different. And one of the names that's been out there for a while now on the Republican side is Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker. He's been a conservative hero pretty much from the get-go when he immediately took on the unions, reformed collective bargaining, made public sector union members contribute more to their benefits plan and so forth. He's not well regarded by folks on the deep left, but his poll numbers have been looking pretty good in Wisconsin lately. But just yesterday, more documents have been revealed suggesting that prosecutors in the Badger State believe that Scott Walker and his top aides worked with outside conservative groups like the Wisconsin Club for Growth, especially in the recall elections, specifically his own in 2012, which he was able to fend off. And of course, if you ever see these advertisements from outside groups, they're very clear to say at the end that they're not affiliated with the campaign, so there's no collusion or anything like that. So that's the allegation here. And MSNBC and a lot of these liberal outlets are frothing at the mouth saying, oh man, we just got rid of another potential Republican nominee on top of Chris Christie and his Bridgegate in their mind. But Scott Walker went on Fox and Friends this morning to point out what he's pointed out many times before. This case has actually been to court in front of a state judge in Wisconsin, in front of a federal judge. And both times, the judges not only throughout the case, but wanted to know why prosecutors brought it in the first place. So just because the allegation has been made doesn't mean that there's a lot of there. But the question, Andrew, is the damage done anyway?
Yeah, I mean, that's clearly what sort of foes of Scott Walker are trying to do, you know, following the Todd Aikenization. Now this is a Chris Christianization of Scott Walker. Yeah, you have to worry if maybe the air of corruption or conspiracy or unethical governance is here. And for some people that automatically are just going to dislike Scott Walker, that's going to be there anyway. But as we saw, again, this is a closed case. There doesn't seem to be much there. Hopefully the public can hear that. But there are going to be some people, just like Bridgegate, that's sort of a name association, and they'll just associate Scott Walker with these troubles, maybe not fully understand what exactly they are, but I heard something about some allegation, about something criminal. If you're a Walker fan or on the Walker camp, you just sort of have to, I guess, do your best to shove that off.
You know, Rush Limbaugh for years has called it the drive-by media. This story is, I think, from the perspective of conservatives, a perfect example of that, because if you dig deeper into it, it actually works out fine for Scott Walker, but the headline can cause a considerable amount of damage if that's all people see before they move on to the next things.
Exactly. You know, I actually, when I first saw the headline yesterday, I thought maybe this was a different case that I hadn't heard about. And I thought, oh, wait, this, you know, then I read it. We already know this story, or we've already heard this story before. I guess they just had to sort of push through it.
All right. On to the crazy martini now. And Harry Reid, the Senate Majority Leader, is no stranger to this category, the three martini lunch. He is currently busy pushing changes to the law that conservatives believe is an infringement of free speech rights. Harry Reid and his allies in the Democratic Party and in many organizations are not fans of the Citizens United decision from a number of years ago, which basically allowed more corporate and organizational speech in campaigns, far more than McCain-Feingold or other laws had allowed for in the past. So Harry Reid is trying to change that. Here's the allegation he made on the Senate floor. I believe this was yesterday.
But I guess what else should we expect? The decisions by the Supreme Court have left the American people with a status quo in which one side's billionaires are pitted against the other side's billionaires. Except one side doesn't have any billionaires. We must undo the damage done by the Supreme Court's recent campaign finance decisions, and we need to do it now.
The Democrats have no billionaire donors. Well, Jake Tapper at CNN says that's not the case, as he profiled Tom Steyer, the lead donor on environmental issues. Here's a couple of clips from that report.
Another point of dispute involves Steyer's assets.
The Keystone Pipeline is not a good investment.
Steyer made his money as the manager of a $20 billion hedge fund, amassing a fortune through a variety of investments, including many in the very fossil fuels he now decries. Though Steyer divested 2 years ago from some of what he calls the dirtier fuels, coal and tar sands, his portfolio is, as of today, still not free of these investments. In other words, Steyer has continued to make money off these unclean energies while simultaneously decrying them.
So that's a little bit of a tangent there just to describe one of their deepest pocketed billionaire donors. But Andrew, what do you make of Harry Reid just trying to throw out this ludicrous argument that there's nobody who has over $1 billion who's donating to the Democrats?
Maybe he just hasn't met Tom Steyer. You know, maybe the wealthy Democratic billionaires just haven't, you know, introduced themselves to Harry Reid. But no, I mean, we've seen he'll say anything about the Koch brothers. Last month, he was calling them one of the main causes of climate change. He's backed the constitutional amendment to basically reverse Citizens United. He is pulling out all the stops and throwing everything at the Koch brothers that he can. Similar to sort of the Scott Walker situation, and just hoping something sticks, sort of trying to create this complete boogeyman of the Koch brothers. It's obviously patently false. And the other thing he said that was pretty funny in that same floor speech was that he said they have far more money than virtually every government as well, which, I mean, there are local city governments that have larger budgets than the Koch brothers' net worth. So he'll just say whatever he can say about the Koch brothers at this point.
What do you think some of his most outlandish comments are attributed to? I mean, we just saw poll numbers that show his party is in pretty big trouble, at least at this point in the midterm elections. He could be out as majority leader because he won't be in the party that's in the majority if things trend in the same direction it seems to be headed right now. Others have said this is a guy who just seems to be losing it medically. So what's your sense?
He must somehow think this is a winning strategy. He just thinks the villainization of these private citizens is the right way to go. It'll gin up his base at sort of this 1%, you know, versus 99% narrative. Only Republicans have billionaires funding them. So I just think somewhere in his mind, he just thinks this is a winning strategy. I mean, I think it is pretty telling that not very many, I mean, I can't really think of too many other Democrats that are on board with this. It'd be one thing if there was sort of, he was being joined by several other Democrats on the floor saying this stuff. But for the most part, he's just kind of going at it alone. Even Joe Manchin, a Democrat, sort of spoke out that said he doesn't think this is the right strategy. So yeah, there might be something going on with Harry Reid. Regardless if there whatever is going on, he just thinks this is going to work.
We will find out. In the meantime, he'll have plenty of space in the crazy martini, the three martini lunch. So
yeah, well, and he was a former boxer, so you know maybe he's a scrappy fighter. You know, he'll go down swinging.
Andrew, thanks so much for filling in. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you later.
Likewise, take it easy.
Andrew Johnson of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us. Have a great weekend. We'll be back on Monday for the next three martini lunch.